Okay, Chodesh Tov, everybody. So we continue our weekly class on Emunah, our weekly dose of Emunah. Enjoy your coffee on this cool morning. This week in the Parsha, we begin to study about the Mishkan. Yesterday I gave the Parsha class all about the role of the Mishkan, the dimensions and the building of the Mishkan. And the Mishkan is the vehicle through which we can connect with Hashem here on earth. According to the Sefer HaKuzari, according to Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, the Mishkan is God's response to our need for a physical medium, a physical connection to be with Him. So when Moshe disappeared on the mountain and we lost the connection or association with Hashem through Moshe, so He built an ego, He built a golden calf. And God comes back and He says, that's not the right way to do it. I respect and I acknowledge your need for a physical connection of Me, but you can't do it on your own terms. You can't build an ego. So here's the response. Here's a Mishkan. So I want to learn in the Nesiva Shel in the Slonim Rebbe. This is in the middle of one of his essays, on the where it says Gimel, where you have the letter Gimel. It's on page Kuf Tzadi Tes, 199. Kuf Tzadi Tes. So the page, the side with the Gimel. You see it? Shai, you see it? Right over here, buddy. Okay. So the Slonim Rebbe says the following. Hinei tachlis abriya, the purpose of creation. Kamay mechazal, as our rabbis taught in the Medrash Tanchuma, when God created the world, at the moment God created the world, He wanted, He desired for there to have a presence down here on earth, just like He has an existence, a presence. Allah for Abba? Okay. Just like He has a presence in the heavens. The Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to exist not only at a distance, not only apart, not only conceptually or theoretically, but Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to have a presence here on earth in the Tachtonim. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to have a presence down here on earth as well. This is something which is unique and unusual to Judaism. In other religions, they feel that God is so exalted and so lofty and so perfect and so infinite and so omnipotent that He's inaccessible. He's otherworldly. He's entirely apart. In fact, it's easy to ultimately become a kofir. It's easy to have a heretical viewpoint because you make this fundamental error. In other words, a person could say, God's not involved in my daily life. You think God cares who won the Super Bowl? You think God cares if my challah? You think God cares if my challah turns out well? You think the Ribbono Shel Olam cares if... Here, go over there, Shai. Go to Atar. Mommy's with Atar. You think the Ribbono Shel Olam cares if, which Republican's going to win he cares who's going to win the primary. But you might erroneously conclude that God doesn't care about the details here on earth. He's exalted. He's omnipotent. He's infinite. He's perfect. He's apart. He's distant. He's categorically different than us. So that's what Judaism comes along. David HaMelech in Tehillim over and over again tells us, no, Kadosh Baruch Hu has the capacity to simultaneously be in the heavens. Kadosh Baruch Hu has the capacity to simultaneously be perfect and omnipotent and infinite and apart, and at the same time, accessible and present and here in this world. It's part of God's greatness. So that's what the Rebbe here is saying. He's quoting Chazal, that at the moment that Hashem created the world, Nis'aveh, He had a desire, which is a funny term to describe Hashem. If you're perfect, you have no needs. If you're perfect, you have no desire. But it's a anthropomorphism. It's attributing a human emotion to God so that we can relate to Him in this way. So at the moment of creation, God desired. He didn't want to just be a part. He wanted to be involved in the day-to-day life and the things that seem too small. And what does this mean? That the same way that Hashem has a presence in the upper heavens, Sheim b'hem yitzahara, and how is Hashem's presence defined in the upper worlds? That there is no struggle, there is no alternative, there is no yitzahara. In the upper world, in the heavens, in Shamayim, there is only awareness of Hashem. There is no, in fact, there's no free will, which is why after a person passes away, they are where they are. There's no bechira anymore. The only way that they can draw closer after this world is by our doing things that bring merit to them. They made an investment in this world through us. We can give them a return on the investment, but they can no longer make investments. Free will and choices are now done. We just said this morning in Hallel for Rosh Chodesh, Lo HaMesim Yehalaluka. Those who are deceased, Lo HaMesim Yehalaluka. those who are gone can no longer praise you. Once we leave this world, we're in the world of perfection, the world of awareness, the world where you can't deny Hashem's existence, the world where there is no Yetzirah, there is no struggle, there's no doubt, there's no uncertainty. And in that world, you're set where you are based on the choices you made in the world of concealment. So, in heavens, in the Elyonim, it's defined Sheim Bahem Yetzirah, that there is no Yetzirah. And the whole essence, all of existence, is sanctity. So too God desired that He would have a presence here in earth. In other words, oil and water don't mix. God is the ultimate source of holiness. Holiness and profanity don't mix. So up in heavens, you have pure holiness, God. But here on earth, in order to create a vessel, in order to create a space for Hashem to dwell, it has to be holy. Because holiness can't tolerate profanity. So for holiness to be able to dwell, there has to be an environment, there has to be a klei kibul, there has to be a utensil that can accept holiness. So this is all background to the commandment we have in this week's parsha. The Asuli Mikdash V'Shechanti B'Socham, that we are obligated to build for Hashem a sanctuary and He'll dwell in them. As I said yesterday in the Parsha class, this pasuk is incongruous. The Asuli Mikdash is singular. The Shechanti Bisocham, and I will dwell in them, is plural. So which is it? One sanctuary in which He lives? Or V'Shechanti Bisocham, does He dwell in them? Which is it? So the Rebbe explains, Shekoy al Tachla Sabriya. This is not a description only of the physical structure of the tabernacle. This was not a temporary commandment for the Dor HaMidbar, for the generation in the desert. But rather, this is the essence of creation. If you ask ourselves, you woke up this morning and you say, why am I here? And what is my life really all about? And what am I trying to achieve? Shekol Yehudi Yeba'atma Beis HaMikdash Katam. The goal is that every Jew should himself or herself be a temple in miniature. Shayasa rak es ratzon Hashem. That just like the temple is a place of spirituality and sanctity and holiness, it's a place of certainty. It's a place where there is no struggle and there is no doubt and there is no temptation and there isn't desire. There's simply ratzon Hashem. What does God want me to do? What is my personal unique mission here on this earth? How can I best serve Him and bring godliness and improve and repair the world to be the fulfillment of what He intended for it? That's the essence of the Mikdash. It's a place of sanctity and a place of holiness and so on. So just as that's true for the physical structure, for the four walls of the Beis HaMikdash, it's true for every Jew in our lives. That our lives, we are the Kohanim, Amamlachas Kohanim. We are the priests of the nations of the world. We are to be serving and leading the world and leading lives in which we are constantly saying, what's my personal mission? What am I here for? What am I trying to accomplish? What can only I do that nobody else can? And by leading that life and fulfilling that mission and leading a life of holiness and sanctity, and that is holiness. Holiness is being godly, and godly is being disciplined and bringing those values of justice and righteousness and goodness to this world. So that's why the pasuk says, Bisochom, that God says, build for me a sanctuary and I will dwell in them. Who's the them? You're not supposed to have competing temples. You're not supposed to build different bummas. You're not allowed to have altars. So who's the them? The answer is the them is us. Besuch kol echad ve'echad, in every one of us. She besuch kol Yehudi tishra kedusha v'tia diraso yisbarach besuch kol echad ve'echad me'atachtonim. That ultimately we need to build, just like the shul, which is the imitation modeled after the temple, is supposed to be a holy space. Supposed to be a place that you don't talk Lashon Hara, and you're careful with your words, and you dress even more appropriately than you normally do, and you are focused and attentive and on your best behavior, and you're trying to create a space where the Shekhinah, where God's countenance, could reside. So too, in our lives, and this is an awesome responsibility that he's describing, is how does God find expression in this world? How does God find expression? He finds it through us.
Through our deeds.
Through us. When we behave and act in a way that brings a Kiddush Hashem, so the world is drawn closer to God. The world understands and values and admires and cherishes godliness. And if we, God forbid, do the opposite, and we act inappropriately, or we're discourteous, we're unkind, we're cruel, we're dishonest, Then someone says, oh, that's somebody who's supposed to represent God? Ha, I spit on that God. I have nothing to do with that God. I want no part of that God. So it's an awesome responsibility to realize that that we are an expression, a unique expression of God in this world. And that with every conversation and every interaction and every choice that we make, we have the opportunity to either bring people closer to God or to distance them and drive them further away. And so God finding presence, God's desire, right? Shinazava Shielodira Batachtonim, God's desire to exist here on earth, He can't control. Only we can. When we are godly and godlike, when we fulfill our mission, when we live His values, then He finds a presence, He finds a space to be an expression in this world. And when we don't, He's shut out. He's closed out of this world. This is the, what if I say to you, someone's in mourning, what prayer do you associate right away with mourning?
Kaddish.
Everybody will say Kaddish. Kaddish is the prayer of mourning. Yet, if you look at Kaddish, you will see, nowhere in Kaddish does it mention death. Mm-hmm. Nowhere in Kaddish does it mention death or mourning. So what does Kaddish have to do with death?
Glorifies
God. So on the one hand, Yiskadav Yiskadash, you're affirming your belief in Hashem that even after you've gone through this loss, even after someone so precious from you has been taken, you affirm your connection to Hashem. Absolutely, that's one level. What else? Wouldn't you think that the prayer that is all about death or mourning should make some reference to it? So Rabbi Lamb, Dr. Norman Lamb, should have good health. I once heard him explain the following. He said, every human being is a unique expression of Hashem in this world. Every human being, with our own personality and our own attributes and traits and strengths, with our own artistic ability, athletic ability, our own intellect, our own point of view, our own perspective, every human being is a unique expression of Hashem. We are an extension of Hashem. And when a person dies, there's a piece of Hashem, an expression of Hashem, which is no longer being shared in the world. There's a vacuum, there's an abscess, there's a loss of that unique expression of Hashem. So what are the words of Kaddish? Yiskadav Yiskadash Mereba, may God's name be made great. May this vacuum be filled once again. May God find expression once again. So the reason Kaddish is associated with mourning is because when there is a loss, there's a loss not just of a human being, not just of flesh and blood, not just of a relative. It's a loss of a unique expression of Hashem in this world. We are all so individualized and so specially unique. We have our own personality and background and our own shtick and our own, that we bring something to this world that nobody else before us and nobody else who lives after us can or will ever bring. And so when a person passes, that opportunity, that expression of Hashem is lost in this world. So the right response is, Yiskadav Yiskadash, that Hashem's name, if Hashem's name has been diminished through the loss of that person, then the way to respond to their loss is with the prayer that his name grow great once again. So bisocham, the in us. So here's what comes out. The Rebbe is not saying this explicitly, but I want to say this. Emuna is not just a faith in Hashem. Emuna is a faith in yourself. Because to not believe in yourself is to not believe in Hashem. To stop believing in yourself, to stop believing in who you are and what makes you special and what you offer the world, to deny your responsibility and your obligation and your mission, to think life is about, and I'm about to lose friends, but there's nothing wrong with having fun and doing these things, but life is not about endless rounds of golf and endless mahjong games and tournaments or endless meals that you cooked or endless, life is about what's your mission. Those are all, it's fine. Enjoy mahjong, enjoy playing golf, enjoy tennis, enjoy entertainment, enjoy recreation. Understand that those are secondary to life. You know, when I speak to retired people, and we have a couple of them around our zip code, so some of them will describe their daily life, particularly the country club, those who worship at the altar of the country club, and their entire life revolves around, I play tennis in the morning, I go to lunch at the country club, then I play golf, then we have a thin mahjong, then we go to Hard Rock and maybe play a little blackjack, and then we this, and then we just start it up all over again tomorrow. I say, that's why you're done working? That's the time, now you have time and you have space in your life. Do you think that's why you uniquely exist on earth? Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribono Shel Olam, performed all the miracles that it took at the moment of conception and placed a neshama, planted a soul into that body for you to be here in this world for that. Enjoy that. Have fun with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But we all have a unique contribution to make. And I don't mean discovering the cure to cancer. I mean, you held the door for somebody and smiled in a way that changed their life forever. I mean, you volunteered in some capacity. I mean that you brought some perspective. I mean that you showed some act of leadership. Or I mean that you were the best mother or daughter or sister or grandmother or aunt or neighbor, and you mentored someone, you taught someone, you gave them self-esteem. But the point is, however we define our own personal mission, our mission draws from the fact that we are an expression of God. That we are how God finds expression, betachtonim, here in this world. So if you believe in God, you better believe in your obligation as a piece of God to be in this world. We have to have, so emunah, we get together every week to talk about emunah and to reinvigorate and to work out and flex our emunah muscle. But emunah is not just about faith and, yeah, I believe there's a God who created the world and brought it to being. No, emunah is more than that. First of all, it's the idea of hashgacha pratis, divine providence. Emunah is the belief that God is intimately involved in my daily life, that there are no coincidences and there is no chance, and that Hashem is involved in my daily life. And that's it's easy to invoke emunah when it's theory, but to remind yourself of emunah in those moments of doubt. You work really hard on a project or an institution. You're not sure it's going to succeed. And then you remind yourself, you say, you know what? I did the best I can. I'm doing the best I can. And the rest is up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And if it's meant to succeed, He will find a way for it to succeed. And if it's meant not to succeed because that's not what's best, then it won't. But at some point, you concede. And it's the most liberating feeling in the world. It's the most liberating feeling in the world. Where you're stressing and you're anxious and you're stressing and you're anxious and what will be and how will it work and will they come and will they sign up and what will be and how will we raise the money and can we this? For whatever it is in life, I could be describing 100 things right now. Mm-hmm. And you're stressing and you're anxious and you don't know and then you just realize, you know what? As long as I do the best I can do, I've done everything that I can do, I can look in the mirror with pride that I've done everything I can, the rest is up to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's emunah in practice. That's bitachon in practice. And that's the challenge of it. Because the moment you continue to stress and continue to feel anxious, you are a heretic. You are denying God's existence and role in this world. Because God let, He says, what are you stressing out? I told you I got it. I told you I'm in charge. And I told you I'm going to make it be whatever is best for you. And therefore, whichever way it happens, you're the winner because it was what was best for you. So what are you stressing out about? If you stress, you're denying I exist. If you're stressing out, you're anxious. If you're worried, that means you don't believe that I got it. You don't believe I'm in control. You don't believe that I'm always going to do what's best. So our emunah is challenged every day. You're running late. All of a sudden you get stuck at the red light, which turns into because there's traffic. And now what are you going to do? You're stressing. Your blood pressure's going up. Your sweat glands are working overdrive. Your pulse is bursting. And you're going out of your mind. And then you stop and you realize, you know what? It'll be what it'll be. There's nothing I can do. I'm stuck at a red light or I'm stuck in traffic. Maybe I should have left earlier. Maybe I should learn from this next time to leave earlier. Okay, I'll learn from it. But what can I do? So emunah is the greatest medicine there is. It relieves you of stress and anxiety and worry. It allows you to get through moments where you're otherwise getting more anxious, which by the way never solves anything. As you're sitting at that red light or in traffic getting more anxious and your blood pressure is going up, it's not like because you did that now traffic opened up. Now all you did was shorten your lifespan. All you did was probably yell at someone on the phone or send an angry text because you were, you know, put in a bad mood. All you did is compound your problems because you're running late and then you got that. Just take a deep breath and realize, it's up to Hashem. It is what it is. He's in charge. He's in control. So one level of emunah is to live life knowing not only that God exists in theory, be'el yonim, but He's tachtonim, meaning He's involved in our daily life. Will I get there on time? What happens? Will it work? Will it... Everything. He's here on earth, and whatever is meant to be is meant to be, and I have faith, I'm sticking with Him, that this is what it's all meant to be. But the other level of faith is the faith in ourselves, in the Bisocham. V'yasuli mikdash v'shachanti Bisocham. That God dwells in us. If you deny, if you stop believing in yourself, then you don't believe in God. You can't believe in God but not believe in yourself. There's a lot of people that don't believe in themselves. They have low self-esteem, and they don't believe in themselves. They don't believe that they have value and add value. And they're just trying to get through the day. And that's a tragedy, because that's an act of heresy, not only against themselves, but against God. This is what we say every single morning when we wake up. I'm sure I've shared this with you before. We say in Moda Ani. What are the last two words of Moda Ani? God, I am grateful to you. Modeh ani. The first words from our lips. It's not ani modeh, which would have been grammatically more correct. Ani modeh. It's modeh ani. Why? Because the first word when you wake up in the morning can't be I. It has to be grateful. So even though grammatically it should be ani modeh, I am grateful, you can't wake up with the word I on your lips. That is not the way to wake up in the morning. You wake up in the morning with the word modeh. Grateful! Thankful! Thank you! Wow! I'm alive! Another amazing day! It's going to be fantastic! This is awesome! Modeh! Thank you! Gratitude! I opened my eyes! I'm alive! Modeh ani lefanecha, before you. Melech, king, chai v'kayam. You're not just some king that's in a history book. You're not a relic of the past. I don't visit you in a museum. You're a melech chai v'kayam. You're a king who's alive and well, who's running our world. Sheikh Azartabi, why am I grateful to you? Sheikh Azartabi Nishmasi Bechemla. Most people mess that up. Sheikh Azartabi Nishmasi Bechemla Rabban Mimsech. But that's not what the sentence means. Sheikh Azartabi Nishmasi Bechemla. That God, with kindness, you return my soul. There are people who don't wake up in the morning. I woke up. In sleep, our soul is extracted, our soul ascends, and then it returns. I woke up, I'm alive. And then we end with those two words, Rabbah, God, and Munasecha. Your faith is great. I've shared this with you before, so you'll forgive me. Rabbah and Munasecha, your faith is great. What does that mean, God, your faith? Who has faith? We have faith in God. God doesn't have faith in us. What does it mean, Rabbah and Munasecha? And the answer is that you wake up in the morning saying, wow, if I woke up today, my contract was renewed. I yet have more to bring to the world. Simply by virtue of being alive, that is God's affirmation that I mean something, that I matter, that I have a mission. God has faith in us. We have to have faith in ourselves. So emuna is in both directions. Man has faith in God, but God has faith in man. And the reason God has faith in man is because God is in man. We are a piece of God. And that's the v'shachanti b'socham. Only if we make space, only if we invite him in. Yes.
I really agree with what you're saying, but anxiety, getting rid of anxiety is a very long process. So in the meantime, to relieve the idea that we're not really ready, heretics, you just pray to Hashem, please help me, you know, believe in you so that I can relieve my anxiety.
Yeah, it's a little extreme to say you're a heretic if you worry. That just, you know, basically indicted the whole Jewish people, or at least one gender of them. So, but it was a little extreme. But no, it is. The Chazon Ish writes that.
No, but as long as you're davening to Hashem, you're saying, help me, please. I'm
safer.
I can learn, but the minute I daven, I think of something else. So every day before I
daven, I agree.
Please Hashem, help.
I agree. It's in his Sefer Emunah Bitochon, the Chazon Ish writes that. He says, Daiga, to worry is the antithesis of Emunah. Mm. Worry is the kryptonite of Emunah. You know, Emunah is all about, I'm doing what I have to do. And not, I'm sitting on the couch and, you know, God, big miracles, I should heal and I should have money dropped off at my doorstep. No. I have to do my ishtadlus. I have to take my human initiative. I have to do everything I have to do. So God, I'm doing my part. I'm doing everything I have to do. But once I've done my checklist, once I've done my part, and I've proudly done everything I have to do as best as I could, I'm done. I'm done. And to worry beyond that, you know, you're making a wedding in New York in the winter. So whatever reason, you decided to make that wedding. Whatever reason, circumstances demanded it had to be on that date in that place. Well, you can spend the next 3 months worrying if it snows and yes, it gets blocked out. Will that worry, let me ask you this, will that worry change the outcome?
Not at all.
No. Will that worry block the snow? So what will it do? It'll create a high stress environment. You'll likely fight with the chasan and the kala and the machatanim. You'll likely, you know, age rapidly. You'll likely binge eat so you don't fit into the wedding gown that you had specially made. You'll likely, nothing good. Worry has never resulted in anything good. Worry is a purely self-destructive emotion. Now, if you're worried about your own self, that's okay. In other words, if I'm worried about will I perform as best I can, will I be disciplined like I need to be, that's a healthy worry. Because that's in my control. And that's not even, worry is the wrong word there. But if I have concern for my performance, then that's good. Because that's a motivating factor to perform well. But if I've done everything I can and now we're talking about beyond that, well, it's just a self-destructive, negative, toxic poisonous emotion. It never ends up being anything good. So what's the answer? What's the antidote? Is mindfulness. The antidote is mindfulness. So that when you're stuck in that circumstance and you feel the worry kick in, you take the deep breath and you return to your mindfulness. You return to what we're learning. And that's why we're doing it every week. You return to that sense of, oh, that's right, we talked about this. I'm not going to worry about the snow. I'm going to change my thought pattern. I'm going to think of something else. I'm not going to allow those thoughts to creep in.
I'm going to bring God into the picture.
I'm going to bring God into the picture, and I'm going to submit, and I'm going to put my faith in Him. I'll give you one last example. I've said this often. I just have basically a limited number of stuff I just keep repeating, so you'll forgive me. So there's a great Chassidish Rebbe that gives the following analogy. It's really given more in the context of the struggle with the Yetzirah for Arayas, for promiscuity, but it applies equally to the struggle with worry. And this is the story of a chassid who was up late one night and he was terribly disturbed. He was worried. He was fearful about he wasn't going to make parnasa and problems in shalom bayis, and he was distracted by his Yetzirah for women and for this and for that. So he went to his Rebbe's house, desperate to speak to the Rebbe. He needed chizuk, he needed strength. And he goes to the Rebbe's house. The story is told by Rav Shlomo Aviner, one of his forum. And he goes to the Rebbe's house and he knocks on the front door. No answer. So he knocks louder and there's no answer. So he goes around the side of the house, maybe inappropriately, looks through the window and he sees his Rebbe sitting at the dining room table, learning. So he starts to knock on the window and the Rebbe doesn't even look up. And the chassid is so dejected and despondent and he goes home, wallowing in his worry and his thoughts and his temptations and his desires and his failures and his shortcomings. The next morning he comes to shul, he davens, davening's over, he comes up to the Rebbe. And he says, Rebbe, I needed you last night. The Rebbe said, I know. I know what you needed and I already answered you. So Chassid says, you know what I needed? You already answered me. We didn't even talk. I came to see you because I'm overwhelmed by stress and anxiety and worry. I'm overwhelmed by desire and temptation and the Yetzirah. These thoughts keep coming. These thoughts haunt me. They plague me. They distract me. And I came to you. He said, I know. I know why you came to me, and I already gave you the answer. The same way that you came to my house and you knocked on my door, but I had the decision of whether to open the door and let you in or not, so too, you have the opportunity. You have the option. Those thoughts come knocking. But just because they come knocking doesn't mean you have to let them in. It doesn't mean you have to let them in. So the thoughts will knock. The thought knocks on your head and it says, what will be? Is it going to snow? What will happen with the wedding? Will the guests cancel? Will they get there? What's going to be with the health? What's going to be with Parnassa? What's going to be with Shalom Bayis? What's going to be with my children? What's going to be with this? What's going to be with... The thoughts knock and knock and knock all day long. Just because they knock. And this is in this Sefer. He says that the Ribono Shel Olam, God does not hold us accountable for the thoughts knocking. I usually share this with men in a different context than I say. An attractive, scantily clad woman walks down the street and you're a thought knocks on your brain. You're not accountable for the fact that you noticed her and it distracted you and a thought came and knocked. That you're not accountable to God for. Because God designed us in such a way that that's what happens.
Hardwired us.
He hardwired us in such a way that that's what happens. You're not accountable for the thought knocking. What we're accountable for is which thoughts we let in. They don't have to be allowed in. So the answer, the antidote is mindfulness. If we stay focused and say, oh, you know what, that thought, it's starting to grab me, it's starting to distract me, stop. I'm not going there. I'm going to think about something else. I'm going to talk to someone about something else. I'm going to be mindful that I believe in the Ribono Shel Olam, the Eibishter, I put my faith in God, then we're able to keep those thoughts out. Yes?
You know, it's just an example, but sometimes I feel like there is no door there. Like, sometimes there's no door that you can keep it shut. Like, even the example you gave of a woman walking down the street that's provocative or whatever.
Right.
So maybe there was no door. You're saying everywhere, no matter where, there's always a door.
We have a door. We have control of that door. That's his point. That's what free will is. Free will means don't say that you can't. It's that you chose not to. But you can.
It's hard to keep the door shut, though.
It's hard to close the door. It is hard to close the door. But, you know, sometimes like a hurricane's coming and you got to bolt the door. And, you know, sometimes there's a gentle breeze. You leave your door unlocked. You leave it semi-open and it won't even swing open. It's easy. And other times you got to put up shutters because there's strong winds out there. So at different points of our life, there are strong winds, and at different times there's a gentle breeze, and at different times you can leave the door unlocked and slightly ajar. But and you have to anticipate those times. So you're making a simcha, you know when you're making it, you know you're going to be plagued by worry, so you got to put up the shutters. Right, you got to put up the shutters, and you got to say, every time those thoughts enter, I'm not letting them in. I control the hinges, I control the doorknob, I control the lock.
Is there a difference between maybe emotional things that you can stop, because there's it's easier, it seems, to stop something emotionally happening versus something physical that you can't always control, it, that maybe you have to look away or do something?
Look, I'm...
Like what?
I don't want to speak in extremes, because it's unrealistic. Somebody feels a strange lump, they get a biopsy, its results are coming in a week. Mm-hmm. To say, shut the door, don't think about it, distract yourself, you don't have to answer the door. That's absurd, that's absurd. Of course, but you know what the effort should be is, you know, the effort should be to say to yourself, I'm trying not to think about it, because what's the point of the worrying? When I find the result, I'll deal with it then. Mm-hmm. And either there was nothing to worry about, or I'll know what I have to do in the next step of my life to take care of it.
Or I've done everything I can do.
I've done it right.
To deal with it.
I've done absolutely everything I can to be prepared for it. I'm done now. So the thoughts are going to creep in. They're going to try to get you. But you just got to shut that door. It's an avoda. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard work. That's why emuna is an avoda. Bitachon. See, bitachon and emuna are easy when you say, emuna, bitachon. You learn about it. Emuna, bitachon. Chas de Hashem, everything's good. Emuna, bitachon are much harder when there's someone banging down your door and you're committed to keep it closed. Yes?
In one of the first classes, you talked about the door to keep open to dive into Hashem.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking that as you're trying to close one door, to keep that door.
It's a beautiful image. Nice. Exactly. Nice. Beautiful image. Shut one door and open the other.
Like
shut one door and open the other. But the point I want to get to, I thought we were going to learn both sides of this paper, huh? Silly me. We didn't even get through a paragraph. But the point that the Slam Rebbe wants to communicate is, when you read this parsha, V'yasuli mikdash v'shachanti b'socham, God says, build a sanctuary and I want to dwell in them. I want to dwell in you. God says, I can't come down here to earth unless you invite me in. Unless you lead your life that I find expression here. You are my means to connect with this world. That's our responsibility. We each have a unique mission. So we spend a lot of time talking about our emuna in Hashem, but we also have to remember that Hashem has emuna in us, Rabba emuna secha, and that we have to have emuna in ourselves. We have to believe that we have value, that we matter, that we have meaning, that we have a mission, that our mission is not just X, Y, or Z. I don't want to insult anybody, but that our mission is more than that. We matter. We matter to this world in such a way that if we were absent, the world would be lacking something, such that Kaddish would have to be said, Yizkadal v'Yizkadash. God would be diminished. God would be made smaller if we weren't here. That's how much we matter. And so emunah is not just faith in Hashem, but from our parsha we see emunah is faith in ourselves, to see Hashem in ourselves, to believe that Hashem has a mission for us, and to go through the effort to identify what that is. What am I meant to do? Who am I meant to be? And that answer is different at different stages in life. If you have little kids at home versus you have an empty nest, you're single, you're married, you're an extrovert, you're an introvert, you're artistic talents, you're the dramatic, whatever. The answer is different for every human being, and for every human being, the answer is different for different stages in life. But what is my mission? What can I contribute to the world? How can I help God find expression here in a way that nobody else can? We are off next week. I'm going to be in England for a couple of days, but we'll be back the week after.